Bedford, New Hampshire on FM 105.1. So we come to you live each week at 8 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays and Sunday evenings at 10 o'clock, and we appreciate the comments that some of you folks have been sending in about the show. Of course, if you miss us live, you can always download or better yet subscribe to Business IQ Radio by going to the WBNH webpage, and there you'll find some podcasts of our previous shows that you can download, and we'd love to hear from you. So with that, let me also introduce and welcome my friend and colleague and co-host, Andrea O'Brien. Hello, Andrea.
Hey, Don. How are you?
Very, very good. Thank you for setting up today's guest that I think will be a lot of fun to talk about. If we have just a little bit of time, we appreciate, we got an email from a listener who heard our show last week about the Pops Up popcorn people and sent me a couple of statistics about popcorn. So let me, I know we want to take some time and introduce our guest, but if you can give me just a minute or two, let's check your popcorn IQ on the Business IQ radio show and see if you can get these. If I were to ask you how much popcorn you think each individual American consumes in a year, what would be your guess?
Are you looking for a volume? Or
volume, volume in quarts.
Volume in quarts.
How many quarts?
I will say 10.
68.
Whoa.
Pretty good. Turns out that our our listener sent in some statistics, told us that popcorn is grown in 25 states. What do you think is the state that grows the most popcorn?
I will say, I was going to say Pennsylvania.
No, it's Nebraska. What would be the second one that you think you might guess?
Well, if Nebraska is the first, then Illinois has to be the second.
Ah, very close. Illinois is third, producing 13% of the popcorn kernels. Nebraska produces 27%, Indiana 21%, Illinois, your choice, third at 13%, followed by Ohio at 9%. And Missouri, as I'm told it's pronounced, that's 6%. So here, what you, I'm sure you're guessing, you probably realize the United States is the top consumer of popcorn. What would you say, you know, can you name one or two other countries that are the top consumers of popcorn? What would be your guess? I think you're going to be surprised.
Canada?
No.
Argentina?
No. One more guess.
Russia?
No. So in order of consumption, Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Italy.
No.
South Africa.
That Italian one is wrong, I'm sure.
And South Korea.
Wow.
We're also told by this email that there are six types of corn: pod, sweet, flour, dent, flint, and popcorn. And of those six, only popcorn pops. The fun and interesting thing that we may talk to our guests about, I think we did talk to them about, was the health benefit of popcorn. Turns out that air pop popcorn only has 31 calories versus oil popped corn, which has 55 calories per cup.
Hmm.
The world's largest popcorn ball was put together in 2009 at Sac City, Iowa, at a festival. It weighed 5,000 pounds. Was 28.8 feet in diameter, which meant that it was about 8 feet tall. And the last statistic I'll give you before we transition over, I'll turn over to you to talk about our guest today, is that if you were to try to put together a string of popped kernels of popcorn between New York to Los Angeles, it would take 358,028,168 kernels to make that line.
That is a calculation.
So these are some, I'm sure these are statistics that we'll all find useful we move forward.
The history of popcorn. Can you imagine being the first person to see the popcorn pop? I mean, that must have been something.
Yeah, and it's just only one variety. It was probably, took a fair amount of research to get that done. So, however, that was last week. We really do appreciate people writing in. You can reach us on our Twitter feed. You can send an email to us. You can find us lots of ways. But we have an upcoming guest, and I know that they're going to be joining us by phone. So maybe I can turn over to you to talk a little bit about who we're going to have today and what we're talking about.
Well, thank you, Don. Our guest today is Laura Winslow from Manomet. And Manomet is a nonprofit organization.
How do you spell that? I always pronounce it wrong.
M-A-N. Manomet.
Okay, because it sounds like Manomet, and I would put an A in there, but it's an O, right?
Manomet.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And they're based out of Massachusetts, and they have a satellite office in Maine. Laura is from the Maine office. And the reason why we asked her to be a guest today is not only is she very interesting and a well-educated person on the topic of sustainability and business practices around sustainability, she is leading an initiative in the state with college students.
In this state, you mean?
In this state.
Yeah.
And actually in Maine, she's worked with students there also,
mm-hmm.
Which engages interns and small business in helping small business identify how they can become more sustainable and kind of take the pulse of where they're at to start. The interns will, you know, be involved in contacting the businesses and engaging with them. And so I wanted the business community in this area to be aware of this initiative in case they had any desire to participate. I'd love to get a phone call from them at 641-4379.
That's your office at the University of New Hampshire in Manchester,
yes,
right?
So Laura has put this program together out of her, you know, based out of her organization, Manomet, where she works. And the initiative is called U360, and she's going to tell us more about that. But it all revolves around sustainability, and if we were to break it down, that involves resources and environmental footprint.
It's not just green anymore, right?
It's not green. It's really all about what do you use? What commodities do you use in your business, from electricity to whatever hard goods you use? It involves how you treat your employees, how you engage with your community, all those relationships that you work so hard to foster as a business person, including the ones with your banker, your insurance agent, all of that, that human capital, if you will, that is involved in the discussion on sustainability, and then governance. And for a small business, you are the CEO, you are the CFO, you are where the rubber meets the road in terms of governance, but what are you doing to track those business numbers yourself? How do you measure your performance?
Well, I'm going to be very interested in asking her about, you know, the difficult challenge always is coming up with the justification to put time, energy, and effort into these topics. And I think sustainability is one of these developing areas that merits more attention. I'll be curious to hear about whatever tools they have or any initiatives. I think you mentioned to me off air that some of this is going to lead to some case studies. I think it's going to be very interesting to find out. I'd like to ask her some questions about, are they doing anything in the justification? And, of course, over time, people want to have some benchmarking and compare how they do. So this will be a very interesting topic. We should do more about sustainability because it is a pretty important hot topic.
I think it's one of the most important things a business can do to improve its bottom line is to examine these many, many factors that go into making a business more sustainable.
And I have an in-house expert here in you because you are the sustainability person for the SBDC for New Hampshire, right?
Yes, thank you. I am.
So that'll be good to do. We really should think about more of a show maybe, or maybe we can do an expanded show, maybe a two-parter where we bring in some people and just talk about the business value of sustainability. I'd like to do the same thing for resiliency at some point in time,
yes,
too.
Yes, no, they're tied together to a certain extent. But if I could just tell you a little bit about Laura before we introduce her. So Laura is actually a Mainer, and she's been passionate about the environment for years. And like myself, Earth Day was, and maybe for many of us, Earth Day really brought it into our consciousness, how important it is to pay attention to some of these things. And so she joined Manomet in August of last year. She received her BA in Human Ecology from the College of the Atlantic, and which is located in Bar Harbor, one of my favorite places on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a Master's of Environmental Law and Policy with a concentration in climate change from Vermont Law School.
Well, why don't we, on that note, why don't we bring her in? By the way, you're listening to Business IQ Radio here on 105.1 WBNH.
Laura, thank you so much for coming to the show today and talking about, I know, a lot of topics that are very near and dear to your heart and your professional purpose. So why don't we start by hearing a little bit about how you found your way to Manomet?
Sure, and thank you both for having me today. I'm looking forward to talking about this with you both. So my background is primarily in the environmental field. I've been really passionate about the environment since I was a small child and focused on environmental studies while I was in school. And I actually got my undergraduate degree from College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor, Maine, which is an environmentally focused liberal arts school, and got my degree in human ecology. And after graduating from College of the Atlantic, I had done a senior project while I was there, which every student has to do a senior project before graduating. And mine was creating a business plan for a nonprofit that I wanted to start called the Naked Truth Project that educates consumers about what's really in the products that they use on a daily basis, how those products could be affecting their health, and what safer alternatives exist. And
can I ask I ask you, like, in particular, did you look at any products in particular?
We looked more at classes of products as opposed to individual brands. So we focused specifically on things that you put in your body, on your body, and in your homes. So looking at things like personal care and cleaning products, food and beverages, household furnishings, lawn care and pesticides, and things like that.
Okay.
So it was really a consumer advocacy organization and trying to really help inform consumers and create some savvy shopping for them so they could protect themselves. And so after graduating from College of the Atlantic, I gathered a few friends who were equally interested in the mission, and we started a nonprofit organization. So we founded the organization and got our 501c3 status. And so that took up a lot of my time after college. And but it was not a full-time endeavor. So I also had a job at the same time. And I sort of stumbled into the field of sustainable business around then because I was looking for a job with flexible schedule so I could focus on the nonprofit, and one that was with a company, you know, whose values were aligned with mine. And that led me to a company called Au Naturals Restaurant, which was a small organic natural food quick service restaurant. And Gary Hirschberg from Stonyfield Farm was the co-founder of Au Naturals.
Where are they located?
The first restaurant was in Falmouth, and then we opened a few others. Unfortunately, the company is no longer in operation, but at the time, we had four company-owned restaurants and had begun franchising.
Sounds like a great idea.
I got a job there working in the restaurant, and then eventually took on a position as the director of marketing, which expanded a couple years later into the director of marketing and sustainability. And so that was really my first exposure to the world of sustainable business and this idea that the business sector can be a really powerful agent in affecting positive environmental change, because they are able, you know, they make their own decisions and they can move, at their own, you know, they can make decisions at their own pace and really take swift action when things arise. So that was that's when I sort of fell in love with the field of sustainable business. And then, you know, continuing to do my nonprofit and then.
So you're really busy. You're a very busy young woman.
I was very busy. It was a very, very busy time in my life. And actually that's what sort of led to, the eventual decision to close the nonprofit, because we were sort of at that pivotal point that nonprofits, that a lot of grassroots organizations hit, which was we weren't yet large enough to take the leap and for me to leave my job, but we were too big for us to continue managing sort of as a side project. And so we made the decision to close the nonprofit piece, but then I continued doing the same educational and advocacy and outreach work as sort of on a consulting basis. So I continued to teach classes and do speaking engagements and whatnot. And so sometime about a year after we closed the nonprofit, I started thinking about, you know, what might be next for me and my intellectual and professional pursuits. And I made the decision to go to law school because I really wanted to have a better understanding of the system that governs, you know, the business world and consumers and individuals, and, you know, understand the regulatory system. I just wanted to get a much better sense of the entire picture because so much of my work had been in the business sector and in working with empowering individuals. So there was this whole piece that I didn't fully understand. Mm-hmm. And so I started graduate school at Vermont Law School.
That sounds great. What year was that?
I started in the winter of 2012. I actually started on campus in the fall of 2011, so right around when Hurricane Irene hit.
Then I
switched into the master's program in a semester later. So I finished the program in the summer of 2013, and I received my master's of environmental law and policy with a concentration in climate change.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'd
like to interrupt you just for a second and ask you, in your opinion, because I've been around the environmental world, business world, where they interface for a long time, and for a long time, the discussion was compliance, compliance, mm-hmm. compliance. Then it kind of turned, you know, into green, this mm-hmm. green thing. And now sustainability, it all fits together.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that shift?
When that started to happen. I mean, I think it depends on who you ask, because there are some people who still believe that it's very green focused or that's their connotation when they hear sustainability. And then there are also people who from the beginning have seen it more as this three-pronged approach. So let's
talk about you're at Manomet, at another mm-hmm. nonprofit. They're based out of Massachusetts, but you were saying you have, or before the show started, you were telling us about the satellite office in Maine. Can you tell us a little bit about the mission and the focus of that organization?
Sure. Manomet, we've been around for almost 50 years, and we're based in, our headquarters are in Plymouth, Massachusetts.
Did you say 5-0?
5-0, yes. We're approaching our 50th anniversary. So we were founded in 1969.
Wow.
And we began as a conservation science organization, really focused on migratory bird research. And then about, I would say, 15 years ago, it started to become really clear that environmental changes were impacting the birds and they could see this through the research they were doing every year. And so around that time, they made the decision to expand their programs and offerings and really take a more comprehensive approach at looking at ways to sustain our world. And that was when the Sustainable Economies Program began. And that's the program that is based in Brunswick, Maine, where that's the program I work on. So today, Manomet's focus, we really take a systems approach to our work. So, and what I mean by that is, we believe that there are several critical life sustaining systems that are going to need to adapt and transform in the 21st century. Things like the food system, the various parts of the natural system. And so what we do is because of where our expertise and experience lie, we focus on food systems, natural systems, so wildlife, the forestry system, and the economic system. And so the way that we do our work and the way that we contribute to the positive change is we engage with the managers of those systems. So, for example, we're not out changing businesses from inside. You know, we're not out changing 100 different businesses. We're working with the owners of those businesses to give them the tools and training and strategies to make the changes themselves.
Laura, I can tell you, as my wife and I actually have two beehives,
and
one of the things that we're very sensitive to. We spoke to the people who do our lawn care, and we said, you know, we try to understand what kind of treatments they're putting down for things like Lyme disease and things like that. And we do our best, but of course the challenge is bees will fly in a 5-mile diameter. So whatever we do in our couple of acres of land are not going to affect what these poor critters are going to get exposed to as they travel high and wide around seeking pollen. So, you know, systemically going after the points of leverage, the larger organizations, and educating them as to how to be environmentally responsible is certainly the right movement. So good.
And so your organization teaches small business owners. I mean, when we say small, we don't mean, it could be what, 50, 60, 70, 100 people?
Well, that's just one of our projects. We actually, we also work with large business owners. So, so for example, in the economic system that we're talking about, we have a variety of different projects. So we have Route 360, which is what we're going to be talking about, that focuses on small business sustainability. But then we also have a program called the Grocery Stewardship Certification, which looks at the operational sustainability of large grocery chains, because grocery stores have a very, very high environmental or large environmental footprint within the business sector. And so we work with these grocery chains to evaluate and assess the sustainability of their individual stores, and we offer trainings to help them improve their sustainability practices. Then we also have a project called the Down East Fisheries Partnership that is looking specifically at the social, environmental, and economic factors that come into play in the Down East fisheries in Maine. And then we have a dairy agricultural sustainability project. So really, depending on which project you're talking about, the managers, so to speak, are going to look different and be different.
The managers, meaning people in Manomet or the business owners?
The managers of their system. So we use the word manager. The definition of managers that we use is loosely defined. So for Route 360, the managers of that system would be the small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Grocery Stewardship Certification Program, the managers would be the people who are running the grocery chains. In other words, we're not out there doing all the changes inside all of the grocery stores. We're training the people who can make those decisions and take that action within their system.
You're listening to WBNH Business IQ Radio on 105.1. coming out of Bedford, New Hampshire. And our guest today is Laura Winslow. She's the Program Associate for the Sustainable Economies Program within the nonprofit Manomet. And we're talking today about sustainable business systems and the kind of tools that Manomet brings to the table. Laura, I didn't want to interrupt, but tell me, you were touching upon, so you're teaching the people within the business really all about sustainability within their industry sector and how to improve their operations and their bottom line. And I'd like to just add that the Small Business Development Center is working with Manomet to bring the grocery stewardship program to New Hampshire grocery stores. And I think they've piloted it at a few of the stores in New Hampshire, and the savings that the grocers, and these are, not huge stores, medium-sized stores, is substantial. And
absolutely.
Yeah.
See, that's great news to hear, because for any of this to be adopted as a hard-nosed business person, there has to be a financial justification behind it. So if you're able to document that it is at least neutral and or saves money and or increases profitability, that's going to be the key to adoption. So you're actually doing work in this area?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and actually that's a really good lead into what Andrea asked me before about, that trend, that progression from sort of the idea of green business to this more triple bottom line focus. And that's the focus that we take at Manomet, is really looking at not just the environmental practices of a business, but also their social and governance practices. And, what we mean by each of those is the environmental piece looks at, you know, their waste management, their resource use, and impacts not only on their profitability, but also on the planet.
And when you say resource use, you mean energy as well.
Right. Energy, water. Yes, exactly. So those are really the two big areas. So energy, water, and waste are really the big areas that we look at in the environmental analysis. And then with social, we look at the business's relationship with their customers, their employees, their community, and their suppliers. And then in governance, we're looking at essentially how the business is managed and organized. And we're looking at their specific policies, risk management, financial and business planning, things like that.
Let me say that I am so glad to hear you say that, because a lot of small businesses don't really understand how important and crucial that governance, as you just described it, is. You know,
right.
Tracking and measuring and being able to manage all those financial aspects. And it's an integral part to being sustainable.
Right, right. We totally agree. And a really good example of that, and I should say, too, that when we're talking with small businesses, we really talk about that governance piece in the context that they can relate to. Because when you think of corporate governance, you think of, you know, shareholders and, you know, boards of directors that exist for these larger corporations, which does not apply to small businesses. So when we're talking with them, we're talking about things like, you know, a lot of small business owners wear a lot of hats, and maybe there's a small business owner that's doing everything related to their books and finances. And we talk about how that can increase their financial risk when there isn't that checks and balances, those checks and balances and separation of duties in place. So just looking at things like that, easy, simple areas that small businesses can adjust and change that will, you know, all of these, that will ultimately lead to greater profitability and a stronger bottom line.
Excellent. You're saying the things that I love to hear, and that we want businesses in New Hampshire and everywhere to really embrace. And I think actually, I think many do.
Well, I was going to ask that question, Laura. Are you finding, is the audience receptive? Are you finding, and where people aren't initially, is it more an issue of education? How are you getting their attention? Do you have to educate them first? Because you're talking about some concepts that, especially for small businesses who are, as you said, overwhelmed and are on an incredibly steep learning curve oftentimes to decide what they need to know to even run their business. And now you're talking about really changing the DNA of their organization by trying to make sure that these are value sets that they have. How are you finding the reaction?
Oh, that's an excellent question. So I think part of what you asked about, if there's initial resistance, is it a matter of education? And I think that is absolutely on target because, and this speaks to what we were talking about before, I think when you hear the term sustainable business or business sustainability, if a business owner is familiar with that term, 99% of the time, their minds are going to automatically go to green business and kind of to this place of, well, you know, I can't afford to spend $20,000 on solar panels or this, and or I can't even afford to put some of my dollars towards marketing and advertising. How am I going to focus on sustainability? The first hurdle is actually changing, or not. Sometimes it's changing, and other times it's just introducing small business owners to what we're talking about when we're talking about small business sustainability. That really, in the simplest of terms, we're talking about strategies for how a small business can sustain itself in a rapidly changing economy and with changes happening in the natural world. So we're really, you know, we really try to emphasize that the tools that we are offering are really designed to help businesses, identify ways that they could save money and resources, that they could gain a competitive advantage, they could reduce their risks, and they can really grow and thrive in, as I said, in a highly competitive and changing marketplace.
And they can use all of those improvements as a marketing message.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Which leads, you know, ties into the competitive advantage that, you know, because they're, businesses never know when competition will arise. And so if they have, right, these messages that they can show about what they're doing towards sustainability, that's something that can set them apart.
So you're talking about tools. Is this the Route 360 program?
Yes. Yeah. So Route 360 is a project within our Sustainable Economies program, and that's the project that I work on. And what led to the creation of Route 360 was just the awareness that as more and more large corporations are adapting and making changes and shifting more towards sustainability, there are 6 million small businesses in this country that are often overlooked and underserved when it comes to sustainability. And they, you know, have time constraints, resource constraints. There's this issue of getting the information to them because they cross all industry sectors. And so Route 360 was designed to give small business owners the tools that they need to start looking at their sustainability and to, you know, also improve it if need be. And so it's the tools that we offer are designed to start a conversation about sustainability. It's not like the final audit that you're going to do for your business.
For those small businesses that are listening, can you talk specifically about what Route 360 is? Very substantial. Laura, I have to say, you've got some great sound effects in the background there.
Somebody just opened the door. I'm sorry.
It sounds very spooky.
Yeah, we'll have you back for a Halloween show.
I know, creepy and creaky.
And just before you do that, if I can, I'll just say we're listening to Laura Winslow on WBNH 105.1 out of Bedford.
So if you could just, in a kind of concrete way, because our listening audience has no idea probably about what Route 360 is, how to use it, how to access it.
Sure.
Go into that.
Yeah, Route 360 is an online online portal or toolkit. And so at www.route360.org, and I should emphasize that it's R-O-O-T, not like a street route. So it's... More like tree roots.
Not like the old Route 66 TV show. Not that
right.
at all.
Not Route 66. So it's Route 360, R-O-O-T, 360.org. And it's an online toolkit for small businesses that they can access and use at no cost. And so the sort of point of entry to the toolkit or the initial primary tool is our benchmark survey. And so there's a series of 49 questions. It takes about 15 minutes for a business owner to complete the survey, and it's a self-assessment tool so businesses can look at their current business practices through the lens of sustainability. So there are questions in the environmental, social, and governance section. And then after completing the survey, a business owner would get scores in each of those categories and then an overall sustainability score. They also receive, automatically a customized analysis is created of their strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And so the businesses can see how their answers to the questions generate this sustainability profile for them and identifies areas that they're strong in and doing well, that they can continue to maximize, and then areas that they may want to look at that could potentially use improvement and have opportunities for improvement. So those are the two primary tools. And then we also have some tools on the site for a deeper level of engagement. We have a resource library that businesses can learn more about their sustainability analysis and scores. And so there are resources for all the different factors that that come into play with small business sustainability. And then we also have impact calculators. So businesses can measure the annual cost and usage of energy and water. And we also have a transportation one for businesses that have, there's a lot of travel or deliveries and transportation. And then we have, lastly, we have a network of small business advisors and counselors that have signed on to do kind of deeper counsel with these small businesses if there is a business that wants to take their profile and actually turn it into an action plan and really fully understand, you know, how to move forward. We have a network of business advisors that have agreed to be available for those businesses.
And I would assume that over time you'll be able to do comparisons between different industry groups.
Exactly, yes. And actually, when a business creates an account in Route 360, that's one of the questions is which industry they're a part of. And so, yes, over time, there will be the ability to benchmark both by industry, geographically,
so
as well.
I have a call for action to our listening audience, and that is log on to Route360.org and use that tool to find out where you're at and, you know, where your business operation is at and where you can make improvements to ultimately improve your bottom line.
That's a great comment, Andrea. I think that's really a great comment.
Yeah, thanks, Andrea. Some of the feedback we've gotten from businesses is that, you know, by taking the survey, there were areas that they were already doing that were very sustainable that they didn't even realize were part of sustainability. And then there were areas that maybe they weren't doing that they didn't have an awareness of how important they were for their profitability and the success of their business. So
the idea of just taking the assessment, I am in the assessment business in another area, and just taking people through the questionnaire will lead them to understand, they'll begin to discover what they don't know that they don't know.
Exactly.
It's very educational.
Exactly. Yeah.
So about how many responses have you had? Any idea of, is this a relatively new program or how long have you been doing
it? It is a relatively new program. We actually just launched the website just about a year ago, and we have almost 150 businesses in the system. Yeah.
Very, very good. So as we look at the other areas, I mean, you said that Manomet has a tradition in some other areas, and you're looking at this activity. It sounds like you're really putting a full court press on the whole issue of sustainability. And I'm wondering, what kind of support are you getting from other organizations? Either do you have partnerships with other nonprofits that are involved in this activity? What about government? Are you getting the kind of support that you were hoping to get out of this activity?
Are you asking specifically about sustainable economies or Route 360 or all of Manomet?
Well, whichever one is going to give us the best answer and most interesting to our listeners.
And let me just say that I have my favorite answer on that question.
Yes, you passed me the U360 data sheet.
Can you touch upon that first and then speak more broadly?
Sure. And I mean, just a really brief answer to what you just asked is our mission at Manomet is applying science and engaging people to sustain our world. And so our work is completely dependent on partnerships. So that is the core of what we do working with the managers piece where we, you know, in the forestry world, for example, we're not out there actually changing how forests are managed directly. We're not in the woods doing that work, but we are working with the organizations that manage different, you know, woodland properties and forested areas. So depending on, that's why I asked which you were specifically asking about, because depending on which project or program you're talking about at Manomet, the list of organizations that we partner with would be different. So you wanted to know about U360, right, Andrea?
That's
an example of that kind of partnership.
Right. So I think that's particularly interesting because this is going to be another opportunity for New Hampshire small businesses to get involved with their sustainability journey, if you will. And so U360, I know you've been working on this project, and I'm really excited for you to talk about it and so for the businesses that are listening, how they can, you know, what they can get out of it.
Right. No, that's great. So you know, as I mentioned before, there are 6 million small businesses in this country, and that's obviously a very daunting number in terms of just reaching out to all of them. And so we have been exploring different initiatives that can help us break down that number into more manageable parts. And last fall, you know, we were sort of brainstorming and exploring ideas, and we just posed the question, you know, what would it look like if college students helped us connect to some of these businesses? And, you know, it's been a longstanding priority of Manomet's to engage with the next generation and work with youth. And so we were, you know, curious how we could continue that while also reaching more and more small businesses in the U.S. And so that's how the idea of U360 was born. And U as in like the letter U, University of 360, if you will. And so U360, I created the model for this project, and we did a pilot semester this past spring semester with the University of Southern Maine. And the idea behind the program is it's an experiential education opportunity for college students to get real-world exposure to the field of sustainable business. And so it's focused on the students, but the university benefits, the participating small businesses benefit. Everybody who participates benefits in one way or another from this program. And the way it works is it's a semester-long project or internship. It can be done through an internship or independent study. Some professors will be incorporating into their existing course curriculum. But the basic model is that there's a team of 3 to 8 students per university, and there are a series of trainings and workshops led by myself that combine both educational content on sustainable business principles and career skills development. So it's really this really nice hybrid between, like I said, an experiential ed program and a sort of nuts and bolts workplace internship program. So the students get both. And so there's a series of workshops and trainings, and then the students research small businesses throughout the country. Most of them will be, you know, in the nearby communities for where they go to school, but they're also encouraged to look at businesses in their hometowns or maybe in communities where they might want to, you know, live at some point and or, you know, do a year somewhere else. And so the students research these small businesses that they want to reach out to, and then they're responsible for all the communication. So that's how they're really developing those professional communication skills, networking skills, time management. And then the objective is for them to ask these businesses if they can interview them about their current practices. And the students have an interview script that's derived from the Route 360 survey questions. And they set up these interviews with these businesses. And so the businesses benefit from just having the opportunity to take some time to look at their business through the sustainability lens and really, you know, take a beat and think critically about their business for a little bit. And then the students are learning from these seasoned business professionals about, you know, the realities of running a small business. And so it's this really, really exciting full circle learning between both the businesses and the students, where they each have things that they can teach the other. It's really exciting. And then after businesses are interviewed, I create accounts for each business in the Route 360 system, and I, you know, input their interview answers, and I follow up with them with their sustainability scores and results. And then the program we're going to be launching at UNH, Andrea is actually in the SBDC. We're partnering on co-facilitating this project, and so Andrea and her chapter will be available for follow-up consulting with the businesses that participate that, you know, want a deeper engagement. And then the very exciting conclusion to the semester is each student picks a business that they interviewed to create a case study and sustainability action plan, and they put together a presentation, and we have a final capstone event where the students present these sustainability action plans to a panel of small business leaders from the community. And it's really a great culmination of the program. And what really happens through that final project is the students have to apply, you know, creative problem solving and critical thinking to understand how these general concepts can be applied to very individual specific businesses. Because with small businesses, you can't take a cookie cutter approach for sustainability. You know, what works for one business might actually be detrimental to another business. So really understanding how to apply these general concepts to specific models.
Well, you certainly will have an amazing set of documented before and after comparisons. You'll get a good baseline for those businesses to follow them over, you know, a 1-3-5 year period of time.
Exactly. That's the hope.
to follow them.
Right. Right. And you know, and as U360 continues, some, you know, students that participate 2 years from now can go back and talk to some of the original businesses to see what's changed. And you know, the thing that is also, you know, really powerful about the U360 partnership is that the students turn the online tool into a conversation with these business owners. And so, you know, the business owners are in a position where, because they're being asked the questions directly, I've been told from the business owners that it makes them think a little bit longer as opposed to, you know, just kind of taking the survey on their own and really thinking like, oh, wow, maybe I'm not doing that. Maybe that is something I should be looking at.
There was a business out there listening who said, you know, that sounds like a great project and I'd like to get involved. What can they do to get their name on the list? Or?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they could contact either one of us, either you or myself, and be added to the list that we give, because we can give some businesses to the students. I mean, if they're businesses that are already interested, students, we can provide that to the students. That would be great.
Well, why don't you give us the website, the journal website, and or any other, just so we get it on record, and we'll do that one more time at the end as well.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it would be the Route360.org
okay,
website.
Great. And Manomet, in terms of if people wanted to learn more about the journal organization, is it?
Yep, that's Manomet.org. So M-A-N as in Nancy, O-M-E-T.org.
And what about, would it be all right to give out an email address if anybody would like to?
Sure, yeah. And mine is L. Winslow. So my first initial and last name at manomet.org.
Terrific. Very, very good. So we're coming towards the end of our time with you today. What's next for Manomet? We've got about 5 or 6 minutes to spend. What's on the horizon? What are the next challenges or projects you have?
That's a great question. And again,
Are we looking at GS 360, Graduate School 360 for people
to
follow?
Right, right. You know? I know. Well, that there's actually a couple ideas that we have in terms of how U360 could grow. But right now, what's next is the, because I can really only speak to the projects that I'm working on. But the big thing on the horizon is this coming academic year, we're going to be launching U360 at, I think, 5 or 6 new universities. And so really applying the model that we created to different schools and seeing how they might need to be tweaked slightly to fit within different universities' curriculums or internship requirements. And so that's what I'm really looking forward to is this fall, as we said, we're going to be bringing U360 to UNH, both Durham and Manchester. University of New England will be participating. Plymouth State University is going to be participating in Northern New Hampshire, College of the Atlantic, University of Southern Maine again, and plans to kind of hopefully spread into Massachusetts and Vermont in the next year or two.
I think you have to go back to your alma mater and get the law school to include this as a prerequisite
and
for part of the
That's definitely
studies.
An idea, too, is to figure out how this could be expanded to work for graduate students as well.
Yeah, well, I want to tell you, this is very, very interesting. And actually, one of the things that you mentioned in the beginning when you were talking about the other nonprofit you had, the Au Naturel organization, my nephew's wife has a whole host of allergies, and she's a hairdresser. And she has built a business around using products that are designed for people who have allergies to allow them to enjoy all the benefits of different mm-hmm. forms of cosmetology and different activities. And that great. Raised my attention many years ago to this particular topic. So, you know, we're in an environment where, unfortunately, in some ways, the environment is becoming more and more hostile. We've seen that in this area where we are now with Saint-Gobain, the mm-hmm. chemical company in Merrimack that has actually impacted the aquifers and the material have worked their way into the water system that we have here. Uh-huh. And we have several different and there are, you know, there are brownfields and Superfund mm-hmm. sites in and around this New England area.
Oh, so, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's really fascinating. And I about the hairdresser. And
it's an allegation of Saint-Gobain, even though the testing has shown that it's in there. And we're not saying it's necessarily hurting people, but we do have the particulates that have been tested and have shown to be in the water.
So, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. So go. Yes. Yeah, so the hairdresser activity is my.
Oh, I was going to say. I guess I didn't mention this when I was talking about the Naked Truth Project. That I the reason I started the organization was because I also had a personal experience with a health experience with toxins. I did my first 2 years of undergrad at the University of Washington in Seattle, and when I was there, my indoor cat somehow got fleas in my apartment. Became infested, and I used the flea foggers that they sell at the store because I believed that if they were on the shelves, they had been, you know, tested and were approved to be safe for consumers. And it was completely not the case. And I got very sick and was given the wrong diagnosis and just kept getting sicker. And finally connected with a doctor who was able to, you know, trace what I was experiencing back to that event. And it totally changed my life, my perspective, my future plans. And so I really was very determined and passionate about trying to help prevent other people from going through what I had gone through.
Yeah, you're the second guest we've had on the show who was personally affected. We had a gentleman for the Valchoice Insurance Company, Andrea, if you remember, who was in a automobile accident and founded mm-hmm. the company, a social venturing company to deal and let you understand which is the best choice of a insurance company to go by. Because he was himself affected, and I think I'm not sure the exact number, but he had like $100,000 in medical bills that he couldn't coverage of because they refused to cover it.
You know, the area of personal care products mm-hmm. and cleaners, things that we typically and frequently come in contact with, has become a focus for the EPA, and they've just launched their Safer Choice initiative. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, vetted products. They've all been tested and certified to be less harmful.
Yeah.
And so that's a new initiative. And, you know, in the field of women's cosmetics or men's just cosmetics in general, you know, your skin, you know, we put who knows what on our skin.
Oh, I know.
And
the rule of thumb I always heard is if you wouldn't eat it, don't put it on your skin. Yeah. And, you know, and some people may think that's extreme, but. You know, your skin is completely porous, so anything you put on your skin goes into your body the same way if you were ingesting it orally.
My wife doesn't let me bring anything plastic if there's a way to get it in glass. And I really wish that more people would be packaging things in glass. It's a shame.
It's a pretty prolific issue, and it's an issue where I still think there's a long way to go, in my opinion. But
Yeah,
there's more awareness that there was than there was when all this started with me. So that's a good thing. We're moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I was down in New Mexico not long ago talking to some people who are a paleontologist and was saying that just as after the meteor hit the Yucatan, we have an iridium layer going around the planet Earth, and that's how we're able to tell what happened. He was wondering if what future paleontologists or archaeologists will be looking at is a thin layer of plastic indicating our society for some period of time, and maybe that's the strata that will exist. What a shame. Well, we're almost at the end of our discussion. Are there any topics that, you know, you want to mention or you want to get out that we didn't cover in the discussion today?
Yeah, I mean, I think just I would love to reiterate to any business owners that are listening that really what we're trying to do is just start a conversation about sustainability, and every aspect of it is with the, you know, hands down the best interest of the business owners in mind. What we really want to do is, you know, as it sounds from our name, Sustainable Economies, we want to help create growing, thriving, prosperous local communities and economies. And small businesses are the backbone of our local communities. And so we just are really committed to trying to help small businesses grow and thrive in this economy. And so, you know, and if you were to participate through U360, through a student interview, just want to emphasize also that there's that we're really just trying to get a snapshot of where businesses are today and help connect them with the tools for, you know, planning for tomorrow. And there's no judgment whether, you know, wherever you fall on the sustainability spectrum. So it's really just about meeting people where they are in this moment and you know, helping to get the tools in their hands. So.
Well, and I'm guessing if anybody's interested in learning how to support Manomet, they can just go to the website and there'll be information on how to do that there, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Terrific. Well, listen, thank you so very much for your time today. Thank you for your passion in the mission that you're taking forward.
Thank you so much,
and thank you for having me.
Sure, and we'll keep in touch with you as well, and we'll be tracking what you're doing, and as you have other interesting projects coming forward, let us know. By the way, the radio station is very happy to provide public service announcements for nonprofit organizations.
Oh, so great.
If you have activities in this area, I'm sure we can call Andrea into the studio and let her melodic tones put together a nice PSA for you.
Oh, that's great to know.
To advertise.
We really appreciate all the work that you do. And I'm very grateful to be able to support any effort that you are making with respect to the college students and small business sustainability and the interface and the project that you've just described to us. So, good job, Laura.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I look forward to keeping in touch and letting you know about all the exciting things we have coming up.
Great. We'll talk to you again. Bye bye.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye, Laura.
Bye.
Well, Andrea, thanks again for setting us up with Laura. Another terrific interview. And for those who are interested, please take Andrea's suggestion. Go take the Route 360 assessment and see who you are. So with that, I'll turn it over to you for our traditional closing, Andrea.
Okay. So remember, you can spend more than you make, but you can only do it for so long.